No stairway. Denied.
These are not normal times.
This is not acceptable.
Sometimes I guess there just aren't enough rocks.
Apparently not.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
Hey, we are back here. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian Suits today. Thank you so much for being with us. Good morning to you. Greg, we were just talking about how the left has actually done an incredible job over the years of these euphemisms, defining terms, making things that are pretty bad sound okay, and which is why things have either get passed or they go through, and then you dig into it and you're like, wait a second here, the Inflation Reduction Act? That what? Or what? I mean, we could, what's our top 10 list? We've came gender affirming care,
reproductive care,
how the housing dignity,
experiencing homelessness, or yeah, camping dignity.
Right. My goodness. I mean, that come up with some incredible euphemisms for what can be some pretty terrible things that are out there. Hey, Semi Byrd has been officially endorsed by the Washington State Republican Party in his run for governor. This happened over the weekend out in Spokane, the Republican Party that came together with over 70% of the delegates going to Semi Byrd. He got the official nod. Dave Ryker bowed out and said, you know what? This is getting a little crazy. It's getting a little chaotic. I'm going to bounce out of this. He had some pretty strong words. Jim Walsh, who's the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, said, nah, the mainstream media, they were this was out of control. They're saying this was out of control, but it really wasn't out of control. And hey, I tell you, here's we got some audio from Ryker. And here's what Ryker said.
Yeah, here he was on Fox 13 talking about his decision to pull out.
What was dramatic was the antics of the party and party leaders. The party has been taken hostage by a small group of people. And my opponent in the Republican Party had been earlier disqualified. And from the receiving the nomination, my speaking spot had been removed from the calendar. In fact, the vote for the nomination for the gubernatorial spot had been removed from the calendar, and then the entire situation broke into chaotic yelling and screaming. I felt that my best course of action was to just separate myself from this. It was a dishonest, deceptive process, all designed to create an opportunity for their chosen candidate, who was already found to be disqualified.
That's Dave Ryker talking about his decision to remove himself from the Washington GOP endorsement process. Whether this helps him or not, we'll see. We'll find out. There's some evidence to suggest that this could actually help him, but we'll see. And Semi Byrd is in a great position. I mean, talk about someone who was essentially, I mean, at least on this side of the state, Western Washington. I'd never heard of the guy up until, you know, a year ago or so. And now, hey, give it to him. He's done a great job of this grassroots campaign and making waves and making noise. And now he's got the official endorsement. And I don't know him that well. I don't know, you know, if it's between him and Bob Ferguson, that is a very easy decision. It's a very easy decision. I would put a give Olympia the bird yard sign in my yard if it's between him and Bob Ferguson. I think a friend of mine said I'll go with a sock puppet over Bob Ferguson, and I would heartily agree with that. We do not want Bob Ferguson, but we'll see. I think Dave Reichert's got the best chance of winning. I mean, you got to get votes here in Western Washington. You got to get votes in King County. No Republican has won the governorship since 1980, and we've gone more left since then. And I think Reichert's got the opportunity to do that. But we'll see how this plays out.
Here's Semi Byrd after getting the Washington State GOP party's endorsement.
Today, we unite for a greater good, for a brighter future for our state. We will come together. We will unite. We will celebrate and support one another because we have the people's business at hand, saving Washington State and making Washington State great again. And let me make this very clear. I praise the leadership of our chairman, Jim Walsh, for the fine job he did yesterday, today, tomorrow, and beyond. They do not know what's coming, but what's coming is unity and a power they have never seen when the grassroots truly comes together in love and compassion for one another.
That's Semi Byrd at his victory speech of receiving the endorsement of the Washington State Republican Party. There's a lot of people who are saying, hey, man, Washington, we're too far gone. Seattle, it's too far gone. People who have grown up here, lived here a very long time, say, I can't do it anymore. I mean, I know my wife and I, we've got so many friends that have moved away, said, I can't deal anymore. I can't take it anymore. Of course, the exodus to Idaho, Utah, other states. But I tell you, there's some really encouraging things going on here in this city, in this state. And there are some people who are stepping up and saying, you know what? Yeah, I've thought about it. I've thought about moving on, but I'm to be here. And I want to lean in. I want to dig in a little bit. And there's a project happening. I want to share with you, and I'm excited about this. And I think these are the things we need in our society because we need good exampling. We need good modeling. Oftentimes we get bad exampling, right? We get bad modeling, and it's always good to have and really highlight those who are doing good work. And there's a new project that's happening in our region that is pretty cool. And we can look at things and say, it's all going to hell in a handbasket. But there's a project that's happening right now that is trying to bring together the faith community in a way that hasn't been brought together in a number of years to be able to serve the city and serve our community in really meaningful ways. And I always have appreciation for that because that's something that I think, you know, as we look over the course of history, the faith community has done so many amazing things. And when they come together for the common good and to do to serve the greater good, those are always good things. And I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. His name's Paul Tomlinson. Paul, I have incredible appreciation for Paul because he's a man who's lived here a very long time. I don't need to suggest that you're over the hill or anything, Paul, but he is in his 80s. And I think of someone who, you know, he could be on the golf course right now. You know, he could be collecting his seashell collection and working on it. But Paul, a few years ago, decided, you know, in his retirement, what should I do in my retirement? And what he said was, I'm actually not going to retire. And he has spent the last few years meeting with friends here in the region. He's met with faith leaders. He's met with community members, and all in an effort behind this. All of this is like behind the scenes, low profile, not in an effort to develop an organization, not in an effort to develop a brand, but to bring people together to say, what if we could serve the city in meaningful ways? And all of this culminated and is culminating with a project called the Seattle Beautification Project. And what this group, what Paul has led and what it's led to is these group of faith community members saying, hey, we've got a graffiti problem. You know, many of us have grown up here, lived here, and it was never like this. And so what's something that we could do to just that can be tangible, that could say, hey, people could get behind this. This is something we could help with. And so, Paul, I want to commend you and thank you. And why don't you share just here briefly about what happened last week on Aurora Avenue, and by the way, we're all, you know, when this happening, you had all the pimps on Aurora who tried to intimidate you. And they all rolled up as all these volunteers came together to remove graffiti. Paul, tell us about this project.
Well, in the last year, my colleague Henry Kaufman and myself interviewed over 100 faith leaders. And out of that came a thing called Pray Seattle, but also Seattle Beautification. And there was one person in the city who has been removing graffiti, and we happened to meet him, and it was a very challenging meeting. He said, I'm doing this all by myself. We're all part of the church. What could we do? So there was a group up in the north end of about 20 pastors. We took this man to these pastors and said, is there something that we could do for the city around cleanup and graffiti removal? And all of a sudden, two pastors, Keith Carpenter and up in the north end, said, sure, we can do something. And Steve McConnell was the other. And they started saying, well, what do we need to do? And so we had meetings, lots of coffee. And they said, and Tim, you know, we also worked with Together Washington that oversaw this project. And they said, hey, we'll put up a web page. And then if people want to volunteer, they can say, hey, we'd like to volunteer. And that happened. People volunteered. And on that particular Saturday, this was a complete grassroots effort. We didn't know if two people were going to come or 10 people. Well, 70 people in the neighborhood showed up. And from about 85th to 110th, we painted over graffiti. We took stuff off poles. We painted whatever needed to be done where there was graffiti and picked up thousands of pounds of trash. And everybody said, what an exciting time this was.
Well, I tell you, that is the type of effort and the excitement and the exampling that, you know, I think we need, because often we can talk about all the things that are going wrong and the tough challenges and the struggles we have, and we do, and that's real, and we have to talk about that. But what do we do on the flip side of that? And Paul, again, I've got to just commend you and just say I'm so excited about this project, because it's something that could continue. When you have 70 people just show up and say, hey, I want to help. I want to remove graffiti. That says something to the rest of the city, and that energizes and inspires people. And so let's keep it going, Paul. Are you going to, I think you're going to keep it going. Isn't that the plan?
Well, May 18th, there's a big cleanup for all of Seattle. So that, Tim, you know a lot about that. You've done that in the past. And we think that we can take two areas of downtown Seattle, perhaps Westlake Park and around the Space Needle, and bring out volunteers. And we can do the same thing in Seattle. And we hope to do this all year.
Yeah.
And there's a big shout out. Henry and I found out that if neighborhoods come together, and when neighborhoods come together, we can do a lot. This group up in the north end, they know all the employers in the neighborhood, all these churches. They've met and shake hands with the employers. They know the girls walking the street up there, and they're concerned about how to take care of them. They're sharing space with other churches so they can keep costs down. So if we build neighborhoods, shout out to Union Gospel and Luke Frank, who is putting pastors together in different neighborhoods, not just for Union Gospel, but to bring people together. And this is happening all over the city, and we saw the opportunity rather than the problems. If you look at the problems, you'll have problems. If you look at the opportunity, you change the city. And we think God's behind all of this, and we're just going to join in.
Paul, producer Greg here, I have a question for you. What's been the most adversity you've faced with the Seattle Beautification Project to date, and how have you dealt with it?
Well, we have one person to go unmentioned who has been doing this on his own for 2 years. And obviously there's pushback, but not a lot. You know, the people that are, you know, putting all the stuff on the walls, they don't like it. And sometimes you have to keep going back and painting over again. But decay comes just because little things at a time. Whereas if we just take a moment to do all these things over and over and just be there, and just love the city and love the people in it, even the taggers, we're going to see change. There hasn't been that much pushback.
Nothing from local government saying, hey, this isn't your responsibility. Let us, quote unquote, eventually take care of this, or any pushback in that regard?
Well, we're a grassroots effort. You know, we don't have, we're not a 501c3. We're not doing things. And we just hope to be able to serve the mayor and the council and just be there and say, if we get pushback and say, don't do it, we won't do it. But we'll talk with them and say, hey, let's work together. The church's real job is to get into the community and not be in holy huddles all around. We need to grow ourselves, but we need to engage and just love the city. I think that's what's beginning to happen.
That's Paul Tomlinson, the Seattle Beautification Project. Paul, really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and keep at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. Hey, for those of you on the east side, oh, here we go. The arrival of the East Link Starter Line. It's coming, the 6-mile light rail route from South Bellevue to Microsoft headquarters is getting ready to come online. And this is the revolution in regional travel, and it's coming. So I know a lot of you there on the east side are excited about this. It's an 8-station segment that's getting ready to open. They've been test running this thing. And voters approved this more than 15 years ago, and the population, it's increased 35% in Redmond and Bellevue. This is reaching 231,000 residents. And, of course, we've seen the skyline change over in Bellevue. But a lot of folks excited about this opening up. And, of course, here in the Seattle side, we've got, I believe it's in August, the end of August, we're right in the beginning of September, that the line that going all the way up from Northgate to Linwood is opening up. So that means new stations at 145th, at Mount Lake Terrace, Linwood, Shoreline, all of that is going to be opening up. And so I know all the, just think, folks, the thousands of dollars you've spent on car tabs are going to be paying off.
And we will see traffic no more.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. we don't live in fantasy land here. No, I mean, look, this project has been an absolute boondoggle. It's been gone over budget and has been delayed multiple times. 8 stops between Redmond and Bellevue. It's not going to get you there quicker. Either way, whether you're going between Redmond and Bellevue and vice versa. I don't know. I'm not that excited, Tim, if you can garner that.
Yeah. I mean, you're an East Side guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My whole life.
Yeah. You're an East Side guy. And so it's amazing to me. Here you are. You've paid quite a bit of money for this, and you're really not that excited about it. I mean, this has been a couple of years since I did the calculations on how much I've paid for this, and based on how much I ride it, which is, let's just say I ride it once a month. So 12 times a year.
Okay.
Cause I don't ride, you know, I'm not a regular rider of light rail.
Are they crowded, the light rail? I don't know, what do you call them, buses or whatever?
Yeah,
the little
trains.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are they crowded when you ride them? Are they empty? What time of day do you usually go?
I generally use it to go to the airport. So that's kind of the main time I've used it. When I've, you know, I'll take it from Northgate to SeaTac. And so sometimes, you know, when you get down into you know, U District, or you get into Capitol Hill, it will get a little busier. And then by the time it gets to, say Pioneer Square, then it empties out. And usually it's fairly light between, you know, Pioneer Square and SeaTac, generally.
Do you think there is the potential, and I'll word this delicately, to invite certain portions of the population to get on and get off at various cities that might not otherwise have the means to get to those cities? I'm talking about the homeless population,
yeah.
Basically. Do you think this will help them disperse more on the east side, especially once the train from Bellevue goes all the way to Seattle and back and forth? I mean, the enforcement on there as far as tickets is almost is non-existent and stuff.
Right.
That's one thing my wife and I were talking about over the weekend, whether or not we would use this thing, and she brought up the aspect of, I wonder if this will allow certain people that don't necessarily live in Redmond to go back and forth between their homeless encampments and various cities to panhandle and cause a ruckus.
You know, logic would say, yeah, that's probably going to be the case to some degree. To what degree, I don't think we know. I think it's fair to say that certainly is going to happen. We just don't know to what degree it will. Although they are stepping up the enforcement.
Right. Well,
recently.
Theory, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, because it was nothing.
Right,
and,
right.
And now it's, we've gone from nothing to something. So that's a good thing. Hey, I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for here on the Brian Suits Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Brian Suits Show. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian this morning. Thank you for being with us. So glad you're here. And tell you, we've had a great day so far, and I'm so glad that you've decided to tune in today. I just got back from Sacramento late last night.
Your arm's tired. Sorry. How was your travel experience? Lots of delays or on time?
I tell you, it's interesting. SeaTac is, and I've always wondered this, and Greg, I want to hear your thoughts here, but SeaTac is probably, and I've been obviously traveled across the country and travel fairly often. SeaTac has got to be about the worst airport experience in the nation that I've experienced. And I've been in large airports, and I don't know why SeaTac is so bad. I mean,
okay, are you talking about food court culinary options, security lines?
I'm just talking about the overall general airport experience. Okay. I mean, starting with security.
There's free Wi-Fi.
what airport doesn't have free Wi-Fi?
True.
But I mean, you come to the security lines just in general at SeaTac are awful.
I'm always dismayed when I see the guy with the big sign walking around saying line starts here, and he keeps on moving back and back and back, and I realize, ooh, that's going to take me at least a half hour.
Yeah, I mean, my daughters, we're down for their basketball tournament down in Sacramento, and I've been traveling with them a lot recently, so my two daughters have been traveling, and without even talking about it, they bring this up. They say, why is SeaTac so terrible? Because you go through any other airport, even, again, large airports like SeaTac, and it's seamless. And it's like, man, this is so easy. And then you go to SeaTac, and it's just a cluster, and it takes forever to get through, and there's chaos. And, of course, yesterday you heard about there was a security breach at SeaTac. And so if you go on X, Twitter, and you see people just saying, what is going on at SeaTac? People are sequestered over in North Satellite. They're sequestered down in South Satellite. So someone breached security, and this happens often at SeaTac. This has happened. I can count at least two other times that they've had a security breach in the last 3 months at SeaTac. So, and they don't give you any details about what happens, but they just say a security breach. And so they shut the whole airport down, which there's already long lines in security. And that just triples the security lines there. And so yesterday on Twitter, people were just absolutely going nuts. And they're like, man, we're stuck. We're blockaded over in the North Satellite. We're blockaded in South Satellite. They shut down the trains. And this happened last month where the trains from the North and South Satellites shut down. No one knew why. The computer went off the grid. And then so people on those satellites were stuck there for hours and they couldn't get out. And I mean, I could go on and on with some of the different experiences that people have had in SeaTac. Why is it this way?
Well, I heard the pro move now is to go to Everett, depending on where you live. But my parents have been flying out of Everett a lot more and say it's been a great experience for them. But so did you just miss this chaos and madness at SeaTac? Or
yeah.
Were you in the thick of it?
Well, it's interesting because we flew out of SeaTac on Thursday night and we got there and we had the Sea Spot Saver, you know, where you ahead of time. And this is a good thing, and they need it because security mm-hmm. lines are so egregious at SeaTac. And so the Sea Spot Saver is, you know, it's an online reservation system. It's free. And you supposedly, allegedly, can go to the front of the line and you go through the Sea Spot Saver line. So we got there Thursday night and the Sea Spot Saver line was longer than the regular line, which both were incredibly long. It takes you about 45 minutes just to get through security. And then we flew back into Payne Field, Everett, last night. And oh my goodness, it's like if I could go on vacation to that airport terminal, it just feels nice. It's like you feels like you're on vacation. You feel so nice there. It's beautiful.
I hope these issues at airports around the country are transitory, whether it's problems with Alaska's system or security breaches or what's going on with Boeing right now. But they seem to be accumulating rather than slowing down or diminishing, unfortunately, which is not a good sign.
No.
But here's the little angel and demon on my shoulder, though. Part of me goes, yeah, these are such first world problems still, right? So you had to experience an hour or two delay to, you know, not be able to get where you're going. It's still not the Oregon Trail, right? That's the dad voice in me always talking to my kids who are trying to complain about problems at the airport. But it's all relative, right? We've grown accustomed to a certain way of doing things and a certain expectation of excellence when it comes to air travel. And so to see the problems start to mount, it's worth noting and it's definitely noticeable.
The Supreme Court today is going to hear the City of Grants Pass, Oregon versus Johnson. This case stems from a broader argument over whether homeless camping bans constitute cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment when no alternative shelter options are available. The Ninth Circuit down in San Francisco, they previously upheld the lower court decisions that block the enforcement of these laws. And coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk to Andrea Suarez for a couple minutes of We Heart Seattle. They're on the ground doing this work day in and day out here in Seattle. We're going to get her thoughts on this. And will this kind of push us into a better position here in Seattle if the Supreme Court essentially rules in favor of the city on this? And can this kind of clear up some of the bureaucratic tape that exists right now? Because some officials feel like they're hamstrung, their hands are tied, and they can't move people indoors because of some of the rulings that have come down. So the Supreme Court's going to hear this today. So it's going to be a very fascinating to see what's going to happen. We'll talk to Andrea in a few minutes about that. And Greg, I know we kind of hit on this before, but I tell you, this is very important as we look at the quote unquote homeless crisis that's happening here, in not only in our region, but a lot along the West Coast. I was just in Sacramento over the weekend, and you see this, I mean, Sacramento.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah.
Roseville, California. I mean, it's just kind of these bedroom communities that are happening. And you brought up with a light rail opening now to the east side. Is this going to impact Bellevue, Redmond, Woodinville?
Homelessness superhighway.
In ways that maybe haven't impacted, because there's been these natural, the water has been a natural barrier, a natural obstacle for some of the that crisis to percolate over onto the east side. And I don't know what you, I mean, you live over there. I mean, you're there every day, obviously.
Yeah, and look, the homeless population is mobile, right? We have an exit by our house right off of 405 where same 2-3 homeless guys were there panhandling for at least 10 years. Well, they just started a new expansion of the 405 freeway there. And so the homeless guys had to move. And sure enough, we found them about 3/4 of a mile down the road, and they're fat and happy and thriving and doing well. And again, these aren't people that are, quote unquote, experiencing homelessness. They are the chronically homeless, and it's a lifestyle choice. Like, we see them at our grocery stores. We see their campers by an old Walmart that used to be there, is no longer there by where we used to live. But again, they'll get creative and inventive with where they go to find their cash and where they set up camps. And I just fear that with light rail's expansion, they could become a lot more mobile and be able to go 20, 30, 40 minutes away from Seattle to a lot of the cities here on the east side. And unless there's some kind of deterrent to get them off the streets, they're going to continue doing what they're doing with impunity because there's no consequence for it.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're quote unquote thriving in their own way.
Well, it's something that I know Mayor Harrell, and we'll get City Council Member President Sarah Nessel's reflections on this, but it's something that we've seen time and time again where when you think of what is going to actually bring wholeness here, what is going to really help? Do people want to come inside? And we're seeing time and time again, and there's been surveys and data that has shown that there's a high percentage right now. It never used to be the highest of percentages, you know, 20 years ago. But when you look at it today, surveys and data show that there's a high percentage of folks that aren't interested. They're not interested in services. They're not interested in coming inside. And there's a propensity to want to continue to live the, you know, the lifestyles that they're living. I mean, you've seen some of these encampments and some of the, they're almost suburban houses that are getting built out into these parks. I mean, it's incredible how some of the structures that are getting built out there. We'll talk about that with Andrea Suarez here in a few minutes. Stay with us. This is Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian Suits. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Brian Suits Show. I'm Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian today. Good morning to you. Hey, coming up today, the Supreme Court's considering whether banning homeless people from sleeping outside when shelter space is lacking amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. The case is considered the most significant to come before the high court in decades on homelessness, which is reaching record levels in the United States. Of course, here in Washington, California, other Western states, courts have ruled that it's unconstitutional to find and arrest people sleeping in homeless encampments if shelter space is lacking. And there's a cross-section of Democratic and Republican officials that contend that makes it difficult for them to manage encampments, which can have dangerous and unsanitary living conditions. One person who has seen many of these dangerous and unsanitary living conditions is Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle here, who's boots on the ground in Seattle. She's going to share with us about her thoughts here. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Oh my gosh, Tim, this feels full circle with you being where we met 3.5 years ago, huh?
It is. It is. And Andrea, we met at Denny Park at the beginning of the We Heart Seattle story. And here you are today. 3.5 years later, kudos to you for just the perseverance and the work that you've done. I mean, my goodness. I mean, most people, I mean, would have thrown in the towel a while ago, but you've got some incredible energy, and now you've got a lot of support around you. I guess share with us, what is what's your thoughts here on this Supreme Court decision?
Well, being in Denny Park 3.5 years ago was the first time I heard about Boise v. Martin, which was this Ninth Circuit decision that said, you know, you can't arrest people for sleeping in a park. And I'm listening to the Supreme Court justices now arguing, started at 7 this morning, and it's just wild to hear, you know, Clarence Thomas, Sotomayor, Kagan, these highest court arguing about what is a basic need and sleeping versus eating, and should we arrest people for breathing? I mean, the letter of the law of this decision is being discussed as we talk right now. It's fascinating. It's actually annoying because we're really not talking about the guy that has a blanket over him on a bench that's sleeping. We're not talking about that. And when it comes right down to the Eighth Amendment, that's saying it's unconstitutional because arresting somebody for a basic need of sleeping is cruel and unusual punishment. And that's just ridiculous. You know, that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about the proliferation of camping, decimation of our public spaces, the environmental and public health crisis associated with needles everywhere, with human feces everywhere. That is what we're talking about. But when listening to the justices now arguing, they're talking about, well, you're just, it's reading here that it's cruel and unusual to arrest somebody for sleeping. And I've always argued all along that Boise versus Martin and the laws are already upholding for things like conduct that we're all actually talking about, arson, you know, abuse of power, stealing power, vandalizing parks. You know, we're starting to see restraining orders now against folks destroying parks with tools and generators and gas and getting restraining orders. I mean, that's a precedent that we're seeing at Dr. Jose Rizal Park. So my opinion in this is that the Eighth Amendment is not applicable because we all know here years forward that data shows that people are not accepting the shelter. We're already holding shelter and then doing those camp resolutions now. And 80% of the people, or some large number, well over half, are declining that shelter for a variety of reasons because they know they're allowed to just move along or go to a different park. So a lot of balls in motion. At the end of the day, I do hope that it is reversed.
Well, it seems like, and we're talking to Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle, that the far left has done a great job of defining terms that really aren't accurate, which then create confusion. And when you talk about quote unquote homelessness, right? When you talk about it, the questions that you're posing, is it unconstitutional to, you know, move someone from sleeping, right? Like we're talking about different terms here, and you're seeing this on the ground because a lot of times it's deemed as this homeless crisis, and people, they say that term and they don't even bat an eye because we think it's just a homeless crisis, but you're seeing this day in and day out, and the terms are wrong. And we have to change what's happening and regarding the storytelling and the narrative on this, because this is not what you're seeing on the ground day in and day out.
Not whatsoever. In fact, what we're seeing is a acceleration of mortality and death because we do nothing. That is what is cruel and unusual punishment, is to leave people there and not leverage and use tools like no camping ordinances to allow proper social services to be discharged along with law enforcement, like the old navigation team. Let's bring that back. I mean, that is light and day is so clear to me. And that gives our social workers and police leverage points and tools to help save people's lives, to get them towards self-sufficiency, to work through their ambivalence. If we just continue to leave people where they're at, they will eventually die. These folks living in parks, sleeping on sidewalks, are all on drugs. This isn't what percentage are on drugs? And that's what the justices are arguing now, is well, there's a difference between conduct and sleeping and behaviors related to drug use and the convergence of them. And I'm like, oh my God, walk outside, go to Denny Park and look, camping in parks is wrong. And what's to say I don't sell my home and just start bringing my camping gear into there, in there, or like, it just, it's very wishy-washy at that point. And I know that sounds very white privileged of me to talk about selling my home and moving into a park, but you have to have the right laws in place to protect public spaces for all to enjoy. And as Ann Davidson, in her amicus brief, and I want to applaud her because our own city attorney submitted an amicus brief that's being argued today, that we as a society have reached a breaking point because of the dissemination of our parks and the inability to access them safely.
Yeah. Let me ask you here in the last minute, King County Regional Homelessness Authority, there's a lot of folks and there's a conversation happening right now about what the future is going to be of this. Is this thing going to continue? Is it going to get reorged? Who's going to be the permanent CEO? Should it continue? There was a story recently that said this thing is a sinking ship. And when you think about that and you take a step back and you think of the billions of dollars that have put into this thing, I can't even put my mind around this in terms of the waste that has gone into this. And I know I saw you recently and there was some who said, Andrea, you should put your name in and be the permanent CEO of this thing. But this, Andrea, I got to believe that your thoughts on this is this thing just needs to perhaps go away and need to a complete and total revamp, because with the billions of dollars that have been spent through this authority, what has really happened? And what are your thoughts on what should happen with the Regional Homelessness Authority?
Well, that's exactly right. Where is all the money going? More studies, more salaries, more surveys, more consultants, more academics, more let's see what this guy wrote in this book. And it's just all theory, no practice. And we need to get on the ground, start over, bottoms up, ground level up, on a very small micro community based approach, and work hand in hand with the community, with other nonprofits and volunteers to do boots on the ground outreach. It's look what We Heart Seattle has done with no money. We've cleaned up 1.2 million pounds of trash, hundreds of people off the streets, just through working through the existing resources and hustling for housing and resources. And the problem with the current Regional Homelessness Authority and the stuff that they're putting out in the media right now, it's just all ideologically driven. They're driven in ideology, and we need somebody that's leading and unifying, that sets politics and ideology aside. San Francisco just reported they've spent $24 billion in the last 5 years.
Oh my goodness.
You know, supply creates demand for homelessness. I think we need to choke out services a bit, fine tune them, make them more efficient, have them yield better outcomes. What's the end game? We should all want to be out of business here in a few years, not scale up, scale up, scale up, more, 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 more. We want people to reach self-sufficiency, get clean, help them with employment navigation, and be able to pay maybe half their month's rent. Let's start with subsidies, not just free housing for all, no matter what. That strips people of pride. It strips people of a sense of, you know, purpose and drive. You know, psychological drive is taken away from people under the current ideology. So I do think we need to shrink it down, make it smaller, community-based response in addressing homelessness.
It's been Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle. Andrea, always great to talk to you. Thanks for your work. Thanks for what you're doing. And if anybody wanted to volunteer and do some litter pickups with you, where can they go?
Well, today is Earth Day officially, where we say it's Earth Day every day. But we are picking litter today from 2 to 4. Go onto our website, weheartseattle.org, for our schedule. And if you want to get involved or contribute in other ways, we do take donations and always are looking for great advice. By the way, I did throw my name into that CEO hat just to ruffle some feathers and see if I get an interview.
Right. Andrea Suarez, thanks for joining us.
Okay. Bye-bye, Tim.
See ya. Hey, this is Tim Gatos, guest hosting for Brian Suits today. Stay with us. We'll be right back.